Hey, welcome back to Whence Came You, a Freemasonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Well, we had a phenomenal week in regards to exposure, on Facebook anyway. 160 or so new likes in about 3 hours. I asked myself why, and it looks like it's because of my son Emmett. Emmett is confounded with Legos, and because of this, I built a Freemason out of Lego pieces from his minifigures. This pushed me to take another step in building. I decided to use Lego's CAD software to build a virtual lodge made of Legos. Once done, I can order it, put it together with my real hands, and of course, the help with the inspiration for the project, my son Emmett. So, as that develops, I'll continue to post pictures of it, and if I can order it and it comes out nice, I should be able to supply them to anybody who wants them. Also, I did want to mention that Brother Robert Lewis is coming out with a podcast, and I'll be featuring a famous Freemason segment on his show, most likely weekly. It will be different than the famous Freemason segment on this show in that they will always be two different famous Freemasons each week. I will link his show on our website and give you guys more information as that develops. The first piece I have for everyone is the second part of an article published last month in Knight Templar magazine, an encapsulated history of cryptic masonry in Europe and the United States, part 2 by Richard W. Van Doren, continued from the February 2013 issue. The Stuart Theory. The known history of the cryptic rite begins to emerge in the 18th century. Some have contended that it is Scottish in origin, having a definite connection to the Stuart dynasty, with the ritual having a hidden meaning associated with Bonnie, Prince Charles, and his attempts to restore the crown to his family. For example, the widow's son is a tantamount to the heir of King Charles I, who was executed. The lost word is related to the lost cause, the raising of a mason, to reference the restoration of the Stuart crown. Further, the Stuart claim of origin theory relates that these meanings had to be kept secret for the very reason that they were treason in the eyes of the current monarchy. That led to the need for higher degrees, where the membership could be carefully and scrupulously maintained with a view to using the meeting places and planning sites, and the doctrine of Stuart succession discreetly perpetuated. This, it is claimed, is the reason for the legend of the secret vault. The Stuart claim for origin goes further. It maintains that the nine arches specifically is a Stuart invention, and alludes to their adaptation of the legend of Enoch, according to Hinneman et al. And the rest. It appeared in two French degrees called respectively the Scottish Master of the Secret Vault of James VI and the Grand Scottish Mason of the Sacred Vault of James VI. The old Jewish and Masonic legends either have three arches, one under the other, or seven arches on a level. The candidate seeking admission to the secret vault was called Adoniram, who in some of the degrees in the manufacture of the holy vessels of the temple, and not Hiram Abiff. As the tax gatherer of the kings of Israel and Judah, he represented the Stuarts. This is a wonderfully thought-out theory. Unfortunately, there is not one shred of documentary proof that the theory is correct. There is no question that Stuarts in exile used the Masonic higher degrees originating in France for their own purposes, but to assert that they also invented them is not credible from what we know today. The Baltimore Theory. Baltimore was an important city, both commercially and Masonically, in the early 19th century. One of the theories of the origins of cryptic masonry then comes as no surprise to be linked to Maryland. In 1810, the select master degree of Philip Eckel and Hezekiah Niles had already been conferred at a grand council in Baltimore. Jeremy Cross, well-known and widely traveled Masonic lecturer, received the degree from Eckel and spread it far and wide. So far, so good. But it gets more murky and tangled when one tries to include or connect the Royal Master degree with that of the Select Master. It is true that Eckel received the Royal Master degree in 1819, 9 years after conferring the Select Master on Cross, but that was conferred on the Royal Arch Lodge. Folger had said that it was actually Jeremy Cross who put them together in either 1818 or 1823. It would seem that, if that were true, it would be in the latter time frame, as that was after he had inherited the Masonic publishing mantle from Thomas Smith Webb in 1819. Those that still adhere to the Baltimore theory, however, have one troublesome detail that has come to light. That stubborn fact is that we now know that Eccles received the Select Master degree from a man named Henry Williams, a past master of a lodge in Charleston, South Carolina, later to be founding master of a lodge in Baltimore. Williams, it seems, was a Scottish Rite Inspector General from Europe, and it was his power which permitted him to bestow the Select Master degree on Eccles in Baltimore in March of 1792. This leads us to the Scottish Rite theory. Without going into a great deal of detail about the origins of the ancient and accepted Scottish Rite, suffice it to say that it was founded in France and that it immigrated to the United States by way of several individuals, the most prominent being Stephen Morin, 1761, in the Caribbean and thence to Charleston, South Carolina, etc. Part of the early Rite of Perfection, 25 degrees, was the fifth degree, termed Knight of the Eagle or Select Master. Morin and his successors, Franken, Charleston, 1762, and Albany, New York, 1767, and Moses Hayes of Boston, 1768, were early proponents of not only the AASR, but also of the cryptic degrees. According to Hinman and the rest, shortly after the organization of the Supreme Council, AASR, in Charleston in 1802, they issued a manifesto outlining the degrees to which they claimed jurisdiction. It stated, quote, "Most of the inspectors are in possession of a number of detached degrees given in different parts of the world and which they generally communicate free of expense to those brethren who are high enough to understand them, such as Select Mason of 27. Such, in brief, in the Scottish Rite claim to the origin and control over the cryptic degrees. It is supported by the fact that their members, some of whom were inspectors, actually did confer the degrees, and in every instance the first record of conferring of either the Royal Master or the Select Master degrees indicates that it was conferred by a member of the Rite of Perfection." End quote. So what happened that they are all not so associated today? According to Hinman, it was because of a falling out within the ranks of the AASR Northern Jurisdiction between J.J.J. Gorgas and Joseph Surnow, which saw that Lowndes, most influential over both the York and cryptic degrees, sided with Surnow, and the degrees were actually permanently exported into the York Rite in 1818. To be continued next month. And just like the article says, when I get the next issue, I'll read you the next part. Next, I wanted to share a book review with you, also from the same issue of Knight Templar. Knights at the Bookshelf by Sir Knight John L. Palmer, The Liverpool Masonic Rebellion and the Wigan Grand Lodge by Dr. David Harrison, Ph.D., published 2012 by Arima. ISBN 978-1-845-49-567-9. The Grand Lodge system, which has served Freemasonry so well for the past 200 years, seems too many of us have been the norm from time immemorial. Information about the period from the first Grand Lodge in 1717 until the unification of the United Grand Lodge of England in 1813 has been well studied and widely disseminated. Dr. Harrison, in his new book, reveals that the strife of transition to centralized authority did not indeed end in 1813. His detailed account of how resistance to centralized authority continued well after the unification is both fascinating and educational. The author points out that there were several Masonic rebellions against the United Grand Lodge after the dispute with the ancients was settled, and goes into detail about the lodges and personalities involved. Some of the behavior he describes unfortunately reminds us of some things we see today. He relates the Masonic unrest to the societal situation in part of England at the time, and points out that non-Masonic circumstances can sometimes shape the attitudes of the brethren when dealing within the lodge. As usual, Dr. Harrison unfolds in a minute detail the characters and events involved in the rebellion. I recommend this book to anyone interested in the transitions the craft has been through and what these lessons hold for the future, as he who ignores history is often doomed to repeat it. And of course, again, the name of the book that they're reviewing is The Liverpool Masonic Rebellion and the Wigan Grand Lodge, The Last Masonic Rebellion, by David Harrison. Next, I wanted to share a Masonic poem, or rather, more of a toast with you that I found on MasonicWorld.com. To him that all things understood, to him that found the stone and wood, to him that hapless lost his blood in doing of his duty, to that blessed age and that blessed morn, wherein those three great men were born, our noble science to adorn with wisdom, strength, and beauty. Now I have to take a moment to let you all know about our apps which let you listen, streaming, and with access to bonus content including Masonically themed wallpapers and the publications that we read. Additionally, if you like, you can check out Stitcher Smart Radio, which also gives you access and the ability to stream, but without the bonus features. This is a free option, but please, if you do this, use the promo code WhenceCameYou with no spaces when you register. And that lets Stitcher know that you came to them to listen to this show, and they help out with a $1 donation. If apps aren't your thing, and you want to help out, you can, of course, donate via PayPal securely, and all proceeds go right back into the show. Next is this week's famous Freemason. This might be a neat surprise, but I am sure many of you remember a show, or at least have heard of Three's Company. The antics of Jack Tripper, Larry, the girls at their favorite hangout, the Regal Beagle. Well, none of them were Freemasons. But Jack Tripper, in real life, John Ritter, well, his dad was. Woodward Maurice Ritter, born January 12, 1905, passed away on January 2, 1974, better known as Tex Ritter, was an American country music singer and movie actor popular from the mid-1930s into the 1960s, and the patriarch of the Ritter family in acting son John and grandson Jason. He is a member of the Country Music Hall of Fame. An early pioneer of country music, Ritter soon became interested in show business. In 1928, he sang on KPRC AM in Houston, a 30-minute show featuring cowboy songs. That same year, he moved to New York City and landed a job in the men's chorus of the Broadway show The New Moon. In 1936, Ritter moved to Los Angeles. His motion picture debut was in Song of the Gringo, which was in 1936 for Grand National Pictures. When Universal developed the financial difficulties, Ritter moved to Producers Releasing Corporation as Texas Ranger Tex Haynes for 8 features between 1944 and 1945. Ritter did not return to acting until 1950, playing mostly supporting roles or himself. Ritter's recording career was his most successful period. He was the first artist signed with a newly formed Capitol Records, as well as its first Western singer. His first recording session was on June 11, 1942. Even after the peak of his performing career, Ritter was recognized for his contributions to country music and artistic versatility. He became one of the founding members of the Country Music Association in Nashville, Tennessee, and spearheaded the effort to build the Country Music Hall of Fame and Museum. In 1964, he became the 5th inductee and first singing cowboy to be honored by the Country Music Hall of Fame. In 1970, Ritter surprised many people by entering Tennessean's Republican primary election for the United States Senate. Despite high name recognition, he lost overwhelmingly to U.S. Representative Bill Brock, who then defeated U.S. Senator Albert Gore Senior in a general election. Ritter was married to actress Dorothy Faye on June 14, 1941, until his death. The couple had 2 sons, Thomas Ritter and the television actor John Ritter, whose son Jason was born in 1980. He helped start United Cerebral Palsy after Thomas was found to have the affliction. Ritter and his son spent a great deal of time raising money and public awareness to help others with the illness. Ritter had his last recording session for Capitol Records in 1973. In 1974, he had a heart attack and died in Nashville 10 days before his 69th birthday. His last hit record was a cover of Gordon Sinclair's famous editorial, The Americans. It reached number 35 on the country chart shortly after his death. He is interred in Oak Bluff Memorial Park in Port Neches, Texas. As far as his legacy, for his contribution to the recording industry, Ritter has a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame at 6631 Hollywood Boulevard. He and John Ritter were the first father and son pair to be so honored in different categories. In 1980, he was inducted into the Western Performers Hall of Fame at the National Cowboy and Western Heritage Museum in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Ritter can be heard as the voice of Big Al, an audio animatronic bear at the Country Bear Jamboree attraction in the Magic Kingdom. At the Walt Disney World Resort, his character sings Blood on the Saddle and continues through the finale as the rest of the cast attempts to drown him out. That's it for this week. Remember to find us on Facebook and follow on Twitter at Whence Came You. We're on Pinterest, Tumblr, and Google Plus at the email address wcypodcast@gmail.com. Also, I want to let everybody know I'm not promoting it yet, and it's still a work in progress to see if it's even a viable medium to work with. But there is also a MySpace account, which I think the point to this will be to share the show and also inspirational music and things, since that's kind of what MySpace is now. Remember to check out the Midnight Freemasons 3 times a week for original content on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. If you want to submit something for the Midnight Freemasons, email me the piece along with a short bio. We can put it up. It's also imperative that if you do this, that you realize this is still your work. We don't get the rights to it or anything. Just remember to use the word submission on the subject line. Likewise, if you're interested in doing an interview on the show, do the same thing, only add the word interview in the subject line. Stay on the level. And for Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.